Hello and welcome to Orbital, the Gadgets 360 podcast. I'm your host, Akhil Arora, and today we're going to discuss the best games of 2021 with two amazing guests. I have Shayak Majum there.
Hi, Akhil.
Hello, and we have a special guest coming back to the podcast after a long while, Rishi Alwani.
Hey, back in my day, we used to call this transition, but yeah, glad to be back.
Yeah, we have transitioned from Transition to Orbital.
Well played.
Not really. It's a sad joke and you can expect more like these for the next 40 or whatever minutes we'll run on for. So if you want to excuse yourself, please go away now.
No, thanks.
You cannot excuse yourself. You have to stay here.
Yeah, I'm here for the puns, man.
Okay, sure.
I mean, I'm here for the puns.
So why don't you kick us off, Rishi, with I'm sure you have a ton of them, but let's kick us off with, your most recent or whatever, your most loved game for the year.
So 2021's been an interesting year. It's been wild for a ton of reasons. A lot of them related to games, obviously. Mm. But for me, I'd have to say my favorite game of the year is most likely Ratchet & Clank, Rift Apart. That has to be my personal favorite, followed by probably Lost Judgment and Scarlet Nexus. Mm. So, yeah, simply because Ratchet & Clank gives me a very good reason to own a PS5. It looks good, plays good. It's like incredible from that perspective. Lost Judgment is really amazing in terms of writing, and Scarlet Nexus is basically a new take on Cyberpunk in a way, which is a good thing considering how bad Cyberpunk itself ended up being a year prior. So yeah, it's been a lot of people think 2021 has been a bad year versus the last few, but I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that development studios themselves are yet to come to terms with work from home.
Yeah.
So, but
that's been a big trend, right? Like everyone had to deal with how to adapt your studios from like working from 17 or whatever, 25 different locations as opposed to one central location.
Yeah. And the thing is, a lot of stuff that happens in dev is basically in person. A lot of it is brainstorming, a lot of it is putting stuff together. And you are at a disadvantage when you have to be at home. So I think it's still been a fun year, man.
Right. Shayak, what about you?
Yeah, as Rishi said, it might look like a weaker year compared to the previous, a few years were like quite exciting building up a 2021. But there were some really good games, right? Like from something like a Deathloop, which is basically a rehash of Dishonored series. And then you have something like Hitman 3, which is again a very good action RPG. And then you have Resident Evil Village. Again, it's like reinventing, on probably not reinventing, but going back to the basics of a classic action shooter. Hmm. But if I have to talk about my favorite games of the year, I don't know if you'd consider it like a proper release, but Ghost of Tsushima, the Iki Island expansion, for me was personally, it was great because, unlike you two lucky fellows, I don't have a PS5. I am still stuck with my PlayStation 4.
With the 97% of the world, you are with that club.
Sad truth. Ghost of Tsushima Iki Island expansion was good for me because it added quite a bit of protein into the game, which was already great. It was like it had new moves, new classes of enemies, of entirely new world to explore, and with a story that tied up with the main campaign also, which I think worked for me. And so that was on the PS4, on the games that I have played at my home. But luckily one of my friends managed to get a PS5 and I got to try Deathloop over there, and I must tell you, I love Dishonored series back when it was released, I think 2016, 2015 probably, and Deathloop, it just makes everything better. It's more fun, it's edgier, and it's a trip, man. It's absolutely a spectacular game anybody should play if they can get their hands on the next-gen console or just wait for the...
Yeah, I think Rishi's a big Dishonored fan, right, Rishi? Like, you've been love with that studio.
Yeah, Arkane is one of my favorite studios ever. And a lot of it has to do with the team that's worked on their games. So the guys like Harvey Smith, who leads up dev there, he worked on Deus Ex, which is like my favorite franchise of all time.
Right, right.
So Dishonored 1, Dishonored 2, played them to death, loved it. Prey, I played a lot. Prey is like still one of my favorite games of last gen and one of the greatest games ever. With me, I found Deathloop a bit of a letdown. And I say that because it essentially is Prey Mooncrash, but without Prey Moon Crash's flexibility in design. Because, and I say that because the thing that draws me towards the games Arkane makes is that there are multiple solutions to a problem.
Right.
And with Deathloop, it's like you have to get that perfect run right. If you don't get that run right of who you're assassinating at what time of the day, you kind of mess up. So to me, I really like the flexibility of the genre is known as immersive sims. So to me, I really like the flexibility the genre offers, and this didn't have that. But I can understand why a lot of people like it. It's one of the more divisive releases of the year. A lot of people I know who died in wool, the kind of people who have the number 0451 tattooed on their hands. Those kind of folks love it. And then there are people like me who are like, yeah, but it could have been more. But, you know, I get it. It's one of the more divisive ones. But what's fascinating to me, that aside, is that Deathloop is probably Bethesda's best selling game in India of all time, which is hilarious.
Right.
Because it just goes to show how little marketing went into everything else before Deathloop in India. So it's easily outsold Doom, it's easily outsold Skyrim, it's even easily outsold everything.
It should not be happening, right? Like, this is a new IP, new name, and you're outselling like very established franchises.
Yeah, the reason for that is simple. It's because when Sony puts marketing muscle, things happen. And the day one sales were really strong. In fact, month one sales were also pretty strong. Even now it's doing pretty well. So it's personally, as a fan of the genre, it's nice to see people picking it up. But also, as a fan of the genre, not a fan of the game myself, but I can understand the appeal. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's been like, won like a lot of awards like across the spectrum, including at the Game Awards. And I'm surprised that like none of you mentioned It Takes Two, my personal favorite game of the year. Like, it's just, I love like the co-op. I mean, I think I just like love co-op games more in general also, because like it just everything becomes like a, you know, it's fun when you have people to play with. And then It Takes sort of like not only fulfilled that bracket for me, but then it also fulfilled all the other brackets of just being a great game. Like, it just like constantly reinvented itself as you play through. Like, it's, I think, probably four or five different game genres in one game. And like, I was not at all expecting any of that. And I was like, oh, okay, it's a new game again. Like, they keep giving you like new game mechanics. Like, you have like new like powers or new whatever like arena you're playing in. And you just like, it's, yeah, I was this mind-blowing for me.
And also, it was after so long that we got a good couch co-op game. I mean, other than your usual FIFA and PES and whatnot.
Although due to the, like the whole lockdown situation in India, I ended actually up playing it like through what's that app, Rishi? What's like the streaming app? I forgot the name now. No. Like Twitch, one you can use to like stream your screen and then play with games. Like I'm forgetting the name now, but yeah, there's a good app for that. Like, it just basically like lets you stream your entire screen, and that way I was able to like much like bring down the price, like, you know, because we weren't on the same console. Like, that was one thing I still miss in 2021, is that crossplay is still not supported properly for most key titles. Yeah. So my brother had a PC, but then I don't have a powerful enough PC, but I had a console. So eventually, what we ended up doing was one person bought it, and then we sort of. He would stream his screen over the internet, and that I would play essentially on his computer, but like through my Mac, which can't do anything.
Damn, that's like messed up, man.
Yeah, all because like they would not give you like crossplay. Yeah. So, yeah, that was I mean, it's still annoying. I feel like Sony let this like their rules slide. Like, it's been 3 years now, right? Like, since the whole Fortnite thing, I think, kicked it off, was that they eventually were like, okay, enough. Like, clearly people are clamoring for it, so let's just give the community what they want. And now we've realized that developers aren't really that interested always in doing that coding.
I mean, it's not just the developer thing, right? At the end of the day, like, one of the major reasons why it tends to be a problem is also the business and legal aspect. Like, tomorrow someone has a problem on one platform and not the other, how do you rectify stuff like that? It's something that, in fact, came up very early on. I think back when I was at NDTV, I actually interviewed one of the producers, I think WWE 2K18 or 2K19, and I asked them that. And according to him, the tech isn't the problem. It's everything on top of that. It's the legal aspect, it's the business aspect. And if you look at it, right, if you look at who's supporting crossplay really, really well right now, outside of perhaps Call of Duty Vanguard, which is doing a fantastic job on that, I don't see, and to an extent, Destiny 2. Like Destiny 2 takes crossplay to a pretty healthy level too. But aside from those, I don't see anyone doing a really, really good job. Sure, you have Fortnite, but I mean, I don't know. Fortnite's not the force it was, in my opinion. It's not something people keep, at least people in India aren't coming back to playing that as often.
Yeah, I don't think Fortnite ever really took off in India.
No, it never did.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, right? Like, if I look at it from games that people are playing here, it's essentially been Vanguard and Destiny 2. And to an extent, even Halo Infinite's done a decent job. Not the greatest, but decent. So you have those who are able to do it. But then look, it's people at scale, right? It's not an indie studio who's putting the effort in. The indies are more than happy to have their say on Steam or do stuff on the storefronts for single player experiences, or if they're co-op experiences are usually a lot more intimate. So I think we're still ways to go before we can see widespread proper crossplay implementation across the board. Because the other part in all of this, if you look at the biggest proponent for this, it's Epic. But if you look at Epic's documentation, it's not the greatest. So we still have ways to go.
Yeah. And it's like sometimes like now happening, like even the big ones don't always go for it. Like, I mean, like the big, like you obviously have Acti doing it well with Vanguard and stuff, but like EA is probably like the company that pushes for this the least sometimes, I feel like. Like FIFA is one of their biggest titles, but they're still reticent about doing anything to merge their PlayStation and Xbox, like whatever, at least gameplay. So like, I get like PC is a different level because then you have to think about where people are playing, like keyboard or whatever, or controller. But like the first thing should be trying to merge consoles, right? Especially right now because we're in the initial phase of like next gen consoles. The player base, I'm guessing, on PS5 and Series X will be so small that those players anyway are stuck with themselves. Because they can't, the game on, say, a PS4 is an older version, so they can't play with their PS4, whatever, counterparts. So now they're even more siloed than other people because now they're on, like, next-gen consoles, and even then, there's two versions of FIFA online.
Yeah. And also, I mean, it just boils down to another very poor problem that is, suppose, like, we played Outriders this year, right? And I played it on my PS4. A friend of yours, I think he had it on his Xbox Series X.
We were all three on different ones. Yeah, I was on one.
Yeah. So you guys were like getting it loaded much faster than me, and I was just to wait and load ho rahe, aa jayega. I mean, it's not a game killer, but you know, I mean, it's just a very weird sort of a feeling or weird sort of a hurdle that we have to get over.
Yeah, but I think in that case, like, that's also like a good example you brought up, but the fact is, at least at the end of the day, you were able to play together, right? If you were just trying to like play some other game which was did not even try, like that was a very good move from the developers, because they were doing not only cross play, they were also doing cross gen and all that together, right?
Yeah.
Because they made the same game across different generations of like whatever the consoles. But like at least we were able to like play, like we had so many different varieties as you just mentioned, but we still were able to play together. With most games, you don't even get that option, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, and it's not just a multiplayer thing also. Like, even if you look at it from single player cross progression, forget cross play, just think of simple cross progression, right? I mean, take Ubisoft, for example. Outside of Valhalla, which can cross save across platforms, Watch Dogs, you're limited to the platform you're on.
Yeah, it's been a very weird thing. It almost feels like depending on what Ubisoft studio makes the game, you get like better levels of this progression that you're speaking about, cross level.
Yeah, pretty much. It's weird, right? Like, and Division 2 was supposed to get this like this year, and obviously this hasn't happened. So it's still in a weird place, I feel. And I think it's going to stay this way for a while, because even if you look at the upgrade park, right? Whoever, the reason why the Series S sold well in the US this holiday season is because it was on the storefront. That's it. It's what people could buy.
Right.
But if you look at it in other regions, if you look at it like India, for example, the Series S sells, but the moment the PS4 is on the shelf at the same time, it gets smoked.
Which should not be happening, right? Like, how is an old-gen console outselling a one that'll last you much longer?
Simply because of the support that retail people are seeing. So it's not right. Guys like you and I who are buying this. It's first-timers, it's parents, it's kids, it's everyone but the core. And when they see a console and a ton of games at the store, they're more likely to pull the trigger on that. Even though they are aware of Game Pass and Game Pass's value, they'll pull the trigger on PlayStation first. So it's in that weird place where, you know, nothing's going to settle down for a while, I feel. And this also impacts how crossplane cross progression works, in my opinion. Because if you're not, if let's say you're a business head at a studio and you need to figure out whether it's worth the time and effort to spend implementing crossplay cross save, would you actually do it? And that's where things get really messy really fast, because why would you if everything's in flux?
So since you brought up that the sales bit, I actually wanted to sort of move on to that. Was that is, you know, these next-gen consoles, especially the Series X and PS5, have essentially been almost entirely sold online in India, right? Or is that, am I wrong on that account?
That's an interesting one. At the beginning of the year, I would have said yes.
Right.
Now, it's I think, close to 50-50. And why I say this is because there's been one major change in the last 3 to 4 months, is that Amazon hasn't been buying as much from distributors and publishers as they used to.
Oh, that's interesting. Why is that?
So the reason for that, a couple of reasons. One is, when I mean Amazon in this case, I mean Cloudtail. And everyone knows in March, Cloudtail's out of the equation.
Right.
So they wanted it, from what I'm hearing, is that they're taking forever to sign off on purchase orders. They aren't interested in pushing much console PC. They don't understand the business, which is no surprise to anyone, because the last decent person they had running it moved, I think, 4 years back at this point. And Amazon, to an extent, if you look at Amazon and Flipkart, traditionally, they're around 30 to 40% of the business between them. And Flipkart's been on the lower side in the last couple of quarters. They haven't been as aggressive as they were. So when you look at that kind of situation, where are people going to go? So the options, surprise, surprise, they're going to the local guys, or they're going to a Sony center, or they're trying their luck where they can. And see, with PlayStation, it's more towards, it's more in that 50-50 range, I would say. With Xbox, it's still, I would say, 70-30 in favor of online. But a lot of it also has to do with the fact of Microsoft's intent. And by Microsoft, I mean their distributor, Redington. Because Redington is not interested in selling or building an ecosystem or building anything. They're just interested in selling product and peddling that as fast as they can.
Okay.
So they'll do a deal with whoever is willing to take their stuff. They don't care. And in situations like that, that's why, you know, most people who wanted to buy a Halo Edition Series X console, even though it made it here, very few people could buy, because one, no one knew where to buy. And two, whoever got it was charging an extreme markup through bundling. Like a 55K console was going for around 70-80K. So it's been a messy scene that way. From that,
does that happen with like the offline for like PlayStation as well? Like, you know,
yeah,
like the buying experience online, obviously the problem is that you can't click fast enough. But like, I'm guessing offline buying experience is the bundling you just spoke of, right?
Yeah. So the bundling is also happening online also. There are a couple of retailers who, when you, let's say, put Xbox into the cart, you'll be told to, you'll have to get, I think, one or two controllers plus a headset plus a game. That all nonsense is still there. So there are ways. And Amazon also is doing some shady bundle in the past where you had to put in a camera to get the console. So all this nonsense is there. And Sony themselves have said that none of this Sony has said no to all of this. At least that's what they said earlier in the year, that we're done with bundling. And they said that, I think, in July or August, I think. So this is basically retailers taking advantage of a situation on Sony's side. On Microsoft's side, it's mandated. So it's like the horror stories I'm hearing from retail are on another level. It's like, you're getting 200 copies of Halo Infinite. You're getting 50 Series S. You're getting maybe 10 Series X. And so with those 10 Series X, you're going to be bundling a copy of Halo Infinite, because there's no other way it's going to move. And because it's on Game Pass, everyone knows it's on Game Pass, no one wants to spend. And Microsoft's mandating it. Why? Because, we're seeing it work for Sony, so you should also do. I mean, the difference is Sony can get away with it simply because
there's no, that's the way to get the game.
No, it's not even a question of that's the way to get the game. It's basically they have the IP.
Right.
Like, people will spend. People don't mind people don't mind to a degree where they, because it's like, okay, fine, you're going to pick up Miles Morales anyway. What's the problem? You're going to pick up Demon Souls anyway. What's the problem? You know, you're going to pick up, Control Ultimate Edition or whatever. So that way you're still fine.
Yeah, but unlike on the Xbox side, no one wants Gear Tactics, but they've been pushing it everywhere.
Yeah, and that's because also the margins on Gear Tactics was ridiculous. even though the MRP was, I think, $5,699, the margin was so good that retail could do $3,499 or less on day one. And usually retailer margins on games is in that 20 to 25% range. There was an excess of 40% from what I know. So you know, that's it's Microsoft's situation and why this behavior is going on is a lot more different. Sony has reached a point where they're like, yeah, you know, it makes no difference. You shouldn't be bundling. But Microsoft's forcing retail to do it. So the difference is in the intent, but it's still painful for end customers all the same, because this has been the best first year for any console in India. The numbers are good. It's very healthy. I mean, they're pretty much tracking what they were whatever the PS4 did in 2 years, the PS5 has done in less than a year. Series X, I mean, considering how bad the Xbox One did, anything the Series X and S is doing is an improvement anyway. So both are doing pretty well that way. There is demand. It's healthy. It's just that,
despite all the like troubles and like hassles that you have to go through to even get one.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. People are picking up. The demand is there. It's just that I feel that both parties could be doing a better job. At least Sony is trying. Microsoft, on the other hand, doesn't seem to
care. Yeah, like at least like Sony like has like, when you're about to have a pre-order, like whatever next round, like you know of it in a few days in advance. You know it's going to be happen on a certain day, on a certain time.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a different matter of whether you can actually manage to get one. But at least like you know it's like happening on certain days. Like, we know, at least you know it's happened like on whatever 11 times in the since May or whatever. With the Xbox, it's just like, oh, here we just like release some stock and then no one even knows, like unless you're following some bots.
Yeah, either bots or accounts that track this. It's pretty messy. And I mean, a lot of it also makes sense to me in a way, because Microsoft doesn't have any India employees for Xbox.
Hmm.
No one's on Xbox full time. Everything is rooted through some guy sitting in, I think, Taiwan or Singapore. So there isn't any focus to begin with. And it's sad, right? Because they managed to get the console out day and date with the rest of the world.
Yeah, unlike Sony.
Yeah, Sony waited until February. And my guess is Sony waited in February because they didn't have the trademark, which was fun to report on. But yeah, point is, you know, it's that kind of situation right now. So, I mean...
But Rishi, please continue.
You're saying?
No, I was saying, did we see this sort of a shortage or a crunch? I mean, the demand has always been there for consoles and PC whatnot. But when, suppose, PlayStation 4 came out, or, you know, when Xbox One series came out, so did Indian gamers, or, you know, gamers around the world, did they also face this kind of a trouble ordering up? I mean, ultimately, it's a gaming console and not the COVID vaccine, right? It shouldn't be this hard to get. It's been over a year and still, you know, most people are like craving for one. So was it the situation? Does it always happen that for a year that consoles are not available? Or is it
No, it's not like that. So with the PS, I can tell you from regards to PS3 and PS4. With PS3, when it came out at around that 40K price point, it was really expensive. So there weren't too many takers. So it was fine. The demand and supply was pretty much in sync. With PS4, whatever they had in month one, which is, I think, 4,500 units, everything sold out. They couldn't get a reshipment for the next 3 months because they realized they had to apply for BIS, which they did. And there was a 3 month gap. So by the time Watch Dogs 1 was on the shelf, PS4 stocks were finally in India. It was like a to the wire kind of situation. The thing is, and this is from an India perspective. Internationally, it's never been this bad,
right?
But at the same time, I'm trying to make sense of how bad it really is, because if you still look at the sales figures and hardware sales figures internationally, both are doing better than they did last gen.
Yeah,
which is basically saying that fine, production isn't the issue; it's a demand issue more than anything. Fine, supply chain is a mess. I get that, but it seems to be more of a demand issue than anything else. And that is something. Yeah, that'll take time.
It's almost like people sitting at home, like because of like COVID, like and having surplus like income because they're not spending on outside stuff. They were like, oh yeah, like just get like stuff to entertain us at home.
Exactly. That's exactly what it seems like to me right now. Because the PS4 era was quite fascinating from the perspective of the fact that, yeah, the launch was delayed as expected. But the demand was pretty good, you know. I mean, no one is expecting the demand to be as good as it was that time. So, but then, and Sony did capitalize on it down the line. The first year was pretty slow. Second year, it was pretty slow. I mean, I remember with Uncharted 4 even, they totally bombed marketing that or doing anything around that, which is sad because it's one of their biggest franchises in India. But then they picked up the slack with Spider-Man. They picked up the slack with God of War. They picked up the slack even with Last of Us Part 2 from that perspective. But it's been tight in the past, but never this tight.
And it's like expected to be tight, right? Because of the whole, because like chips are so in demand now, like across, like forget like just electronics and like cars and everything, that everyone's been basically saying that even deep into 2022, you should expect the same situation as now.
I mean, I don't know. We'll have to see, because one thing is for sure, now no platform holder wants to be seen in a situation where their games are on the shelf, but you can't buy the console.
Hmm.
Which is why if you noticed with Ratchet and Clank, they made sure that stock was there. And ample stock was there. This is why we're seeing multiple restocks on the Series X. Each day there's a restock, it seems. And that's happening because you have Halo Infinite.
Right.
So I think what's going to happen is you're going to reach a situation, the way I look at it is, when, let's say, Horizon Forbidden West and when GT7 are out, you'll see decent supply of PS5. When Microsoft probably has Avowed or whatever else is coming next, they'll make sure there's a decent supply. Because they don't want to be caught with their pants down. Then becomes a very embarrassing situation, you know? The last thing you want are headlines reading that, oh, it's a great game, but you can't buy the console to play it on.
Yeah, like, which is why sometimes, like, I do feel like that situation, you know, like, where it's like, did the consoles actually launch if you can't buy them a year into their launch, right? Like, what's the meaning of the word launch anymore in this kind of era?
True. And, you know, that's why I think, like, I have a feeling they'll manage it a little better next year. So, I'm not too worried. And I say that because, I mean, even if you look at it, right, if you look at the gaming market as a whole in India, this is probably the smallest niche. What's worrying to me is to see what's going to happen in mobiles next year more than anything else, at least from a gaming perspective. Because this is still the smallest niche, and, you know, there are people who are going to get it one hook or crook. Ditto with GPUs. GPUs are also in that same bracket, in my opinion. It's going to be fun to see what happens when you know, people aren't able to play stuff like BGMI and you stayed on a decent phone, then we're going to see real drama. I think for now it's manageable.
Right. Okay, so before we fully move into 2022, like, we're going to talk about games. You just mentioned Horizon Forbidden West and stuff like that. I also want to tackle the fact that, you know, 2021 has been a bombshell year in terms of, obviously, it's nothing new coming from the gaming industry, but I feel like it was a big year in terms of, like, reportage coming on, you know, sexual harassment and, like, just abusive work cultures across the gaming industry. Obviously, this is stuff, like, that's been going back, what, I think 5-6 years or more, but, like, sort of coming to the fore, right, this year in terms of being outed and being talked about publicly.
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty wild that way, where we're actually seeing, so there are two sides to it, right? You're actually seeing quote-unquote games journalism growing up. Surprise, surprise, doing what journalists in other fields do, which is great. But at the same time, you also have a certain section of audience who are pushback saying, no, it should just be on the games and the reviews. None of this matters. But I mean, that's the growing pains as an industry that they'll have to embrace. Because keep in mind, like, movies and TV and, you know, entertainment in general has been around for a longer period of time where all this is fine. So I think it's going to be fun to see how that evolves. But that being said, yeah, I mean, there's been some pretty bombshell reports, particularly on Activision and what went down with them, to the point where it's very rare to see Sony, Nintendo, and Microsoft issue statements saying that they're considering their business with Activision. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
All three actually saying this never happens. And my suspicion on that is, I mean, tinfoil hat time, is most likely that because Sony said it first, so Sony was seen saying it first internally, at least the other two had to issue something. So, or say something. So, I think it's good that way. But the other part of it also is, I mean, Activision aside, Riot's always had its fair share of grief, as did Ubisoft. In fact, I think Kotaku's report on Ubisoft Singapore was quite the eye-opener, because it actually led to the Singaporean government investigating them, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I read about that, yeah.
From closer to home, yeah, I mean, there have been a couple of instances. And a lot of it also has to do with how these companies want to be perceived. So one thing which comes to my mind was when I did interview the Ubisoft team around Prince of Persia, when they announced the Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake, and this was on my site, the Miko Reactor. What we noticed, what was really amusing was one of the people who I interviewed straight up said that, we have 170 people working on the game. And it's quite amusing because later I get a call from the comms guy saying that, hey, you know, can you remove that? I'm like, no, why? They're like, no, we...
yeah, just like number of people working.
No, because internally they don't want that perception that throwing bodies are a problem. And
right.
The question did, and there was an interview which also did focus on crunch, right? I did ask them, are you guys crunching? How are you guys managing? Because to be honest, the game looked rushed.
Yeah. And I'm glad that it's been delayed so much now, actually.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if that ships and eventually who's shipped it, you know? From what I hear, there's been a lot of people from Ubisoft Pune who've been leaving. So I don't know whether they're going to be the ones shipping it at the end.
Yeah, plus Ubisoft has that habit of like having 6-7 studios working on every game, right?
True, but if you look at what the other studios are working on, I don't think anyone internally is handling it. We'll have to see.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't have a date, right? Just like expected next year at this point.
Yep.
Right, so since we're on that topic, Shrayak, I think you were saying something.
No, so I was just thinking back a little bit. I mean, see, this entire treatment of workers and, you know, your female employees in your workspace and all, it's not really, you know, exclusive to any single industry or any single country anymore, right? True. I mean, what comes to mind is, I think it was like 5-6 years ago when Microsoft, like, they had a party of some launch party or some event they had, and they put on like female dancers on the table, you know, in their, you know, typical bikinis and whatnot, and it was a huge uproar, and I think Phil Spencer had to you know, issue an apology also at that time, and you know, it's still 5-6 years ago, and it's still, you know, 6 years down the line, and you still have, you know, Bobby Kotick and, you know, Ryan Games and this and that, and every single other, like, companies that you grew up playing games of, and you just figured out, oh, okay, they are as treacherous as any other or most other establishments around. It's just this idea of, you know, how you take your woman, how you treat your woman. It's just a sad situation. It's nothing else.
And the backlash that Rishi was talking about, like, in a way that goes back to, God forbid I'm bringing this up right now, but like, it goes back to the Gamergate movement, right, Rishi?
No, I don't think this has more. I see, Gamergate was another thing in itself. I think a lot of this also has to do with the fact that, look, in the past, it was really tough to get information on what studios were up to.
Right.
And now those walls are breaking down. Today, if you know who to talk to, you'll get the entire lowdown on their roadmap for the next 5 years. So it's quite easier to get information around these days. And because of that, you have more people talking, you have more reporting going on. That's one part of it. The second part of it, let's be honest, most people who get into the games business, they get in because they love games. They're blinded by the passion. And they're the ones who are getting exploited the most. And it happens here as well. I mean, the starting salaries in the games industry in India are ridiculously low versus everything else.
Right.
Which is funny to me, because you, on one end, you have the VCs and investors and publishers saying stuff like, oh, Indians are spending $200 million on battle royale and shooters on mobile on mobile. Which, if that was the case, you'd be paying employees better, which isn't happening.
Yeah, but like, as we have known, it's not across like every industry in the world or just the capitalistic environment. Like, it's, the money never flows down to workers, right? It always goes down other pockets.
Yeah, it doesn't. And it's interesting because at the same time, if you look at it, why do you think at the end of the day the startup ecosystem or the IT ecosystem is still essentially in a bidding war for the best talent? That's not happening in gaming, because gaming can't attract the best talent because the flow of money is in everywhere else but where it should be.
Right.
So, I mean, from that perspective, if you look at one, yes, that the talent is on the younger side and is primed to be taken advantage of. The second thing that's also there is, aside from that, is they don't know. I mean, there isn't any code or structure for them to understand how they should and shouldn't be treated, right?
Mm.
But the fact is, people are getting aware of it now. People are talking up, and people are willing to voice their dissent. It's going to take a while for it to come together. I mean, look, eventually, the best way to run with any of this is you'll need unionization. That's going to happen. It's an inevitable situation. I see it, at least in other countries. India, we still have a long way to go for people to even recognize that video games aren't gambling. But I think that the first order of business is, yeah, you need to unionize. Otherwise, it's going to keep being a problem.
Right. Strong call.
I think let's end on a slightly sunnier note if possible. What are you guys looking forward to next year, aside from hopefully less abusive work cultures?
Can I say what I don't want definitely next year, apart from the abusive work culture, of course?
Sure. sure.
So, you know, please stop releasing remasters of games, like the epic, the beautifully done GTA remaster or definitive edition or whatever it was called.
I think it's like one more due next year, right? On some other platform.
Is it like kuch baki hai abhi bhi?
Some platform they've missed. They have decided.
Switch version. Yeah. The physical Switch version is coming next year.
But they haven't learned from the debacle.
And wait, there is still GTA 5, which is coming in next gen as well.
Yeah, GTA 5 for the next gen.
That might be handled better just because there's so much money involved in it.
Same.
Yeah, probably. So yeah, among things that I don't want, I definitely don't want another, you know, remaster of Saints Row and your...
Naam ke liye remaster.
Yeah, I mean, they don't do a great job, right? I mean, for example, Mafia remaster on whatever that, Mafia 2, I think it was. Mafia 2, when I played it first on my PC, it was a potato PC. I mean, it had nothing in it, right? But still it felt good. It like played nicely, even in the lowest settings also, it just felt good. And I played Mafia 2 remastered again on my PS4, and I went like, okay, so I mean, what's new? I mean, I spent out some amount of money for this.
Yeah, that was like a packaging thing. So Mafia 1, they actually, like, I actually reviewed the remastered version. So Mafia 1 was the only game where they actually went back and like recreated assets from scratch. But then I think like a business side of the company probably was like, oh, but if we can do like a Mafia trilogy remastered like package. And they were like, oh, well, you don't have the time for that. So then that's what happened with you, like, is that Mafia 2 and Mafia 3, they gave Namco like remasters just so they could create like a collection saying Mafia remastered trilogy.
Yeah, yeah. And they had this weird thing going on that if you unlock this sort of a skin in this game and then you can use it on Mafia 3. Doesn't really matter if you have Mafia 3 with you or not, but you know, you won it. Keep it. It doesn't make sense at all, man. And even the games look so bad. I mean, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, I'm questioning myself. Like, I mean, was it really this bad when we played it for the first time? Or is it like they have like, you know, undermined the gaming, the graphics, the overall experience? I did not get it. It's just looks terrible. I mean, if you're doing a proper remaster, maybe may as well go like Final Fantasy. It's a proper remaster. It's a redoing of the entire game, and it's not just, you know, adding HD graphics, high res graphics. Ho gaya, you know, here you go. So yeah, I mean that is happening too much. I mean, just like I wish they will stop FIFA for some years. I wish they will stop remasters, but I'm guessing that's not happening anytime soon. So
yeah, that's not gonna happen. Like, companies like EA and Take-Two are not leaving money on the table ever.
That's true.
Rishi, what's your big hope and dream?
So let's get the games out of the way first. So mostly looking forward to Weird West. That's out, I think, March. That's done by the guys who worked on Prey. So really looking forward to it. Then I'm also looking forward to Horizon Forbidden West. That's looking really good. I'm curious to see how they resolve certain plot points from the first game. So very interested to see how they, you know, build on the universe and stuff. And third thing, because I am a scrub and I am a massive Destiny 2 fan. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Witch Queen expansion.
Nice.
I've played way too much Destiny in the last year than I'd like to admit. But yeah, definitely looking to see how the story pans out with this. Aside from those three, what else? I mean, yeah, Callisto Protocol. I'm looking forward to see that simply because it's Krafton's big AAA game. And it's a big AAA single player game from the guys who made Dead Space.
Right.
So very curious to see how Callisto Protocol turns out. And the other one which I'm really looking forward to is Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, because OG Borderlands, Borderlands 3, Borderlands 2, they were nice and all, but this actually looks like something that, you know, could be very fun to play. So yeah, that's what I'm... And yeah, there's Pokemon Legends Arceus. Also want to see how that works out. But yeah, that's what I'm kind of looking forward to, at least off the top of my head, from next year. In terms of actual trends and stuff I wish happens or doesn't happen, I'm very interested to see, and this is purely from the perspective of seeing how the math works, is how Sony does its version of Game Pass. Because because Sony and Nintendo are able to maintain profits at $60-$70. And the business model works, right? Game Pass it doesn't make money for Microsoft, and Microsoft can take that because they're a $1 trillion company. On the basis of that information, it's pretty obvious to me that this will be this will probably replace, like, you know, the greatest hits catalog or something along those lines.
Yeah, I feel like PlayStation Hits will probably like get included in it somehow. where.
Yep.
So PlayStation Plus will just be a Game Pass, right? I mean, it's just Game Pass for PlayStation.
I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I'm curious about. I'm very curious to see how they do this, because to me, it's something you do to get people into your ecosystem, and it's not something that's going to make you money. And again, like Sony and Nintendo, they're more conservative on this than Microsoft, and they actually care about physical retail. So it'll be interesting to see how they run that. Aside from that, I think what I'm really also curious to see is how we see service games evolve, because Division 2 is another game I play a ton, and I do know that they have some things planned for next, which was supposed to happen this year that I moved to next year. So I'm very curious to see how that part of the business tends to evolve, because not everyone can do it at the scale of a Final Fantasy 14, you know, with mad expansions, vibrant community. So how these relatively smaller games tend to manage that would be fun. And unlike Shayak, I'm actually looking forward to more remasters. For one simple reason, they're a good way to revisit, if done right, older games. Like, to be honest, I really like the fact that you found Icky Island cool, because when you play it on the PS5, you're going to appreciate a few other finer details like DualSense. So to me, like, yeah, I mean, if done right, it's going to be fun. The Uncharted remaster seems interesting from that perspective. And Death Stranding Director's Cut was also fun again from that perspective, because they added stuff that enhanced the experience.
That weren't there in the first year.
Exactly. So assuming publishers know what people want and actually figure that out, I think we could see some interesting things next year. But yeah, that's my scene. You, Akhil?
Yeah, I feel like as you have pretty much covered it all. Like, I think the fact that Sony is finally, in a way, like waking up to the fact that Game Pass is a good deal, that I am interested to see how they go about it, because it's just been like a non-competition space, right? It's almost like, oh yeah, like you can get Game Pass for Xbox, everything else you're like, I don't know, there is no competition. So like the fact that now one company is like finally like, okay, you know, or the biggest company in fact in gaming is like, you know, waking up to like, oh yeah, maybe we should do something about it. I want to see how they go about it. Maybe hopefully it's not just, you know, like it's just a expanded version of PS now tacked down. It's actually like, you know, thought out from, because the good thing is they have, obviously, everyone knows, like, they have a better catalog of IP, right? So if that stuff is somehow included in the whatever the rumored 3 tiers of PS Plus, it's like it's almost unbeatable package then. And then it's actually, I think, get kind of get people excited, because I have friends who have literally gotten, I think, Series X's because they were like, oh, this is, you know, because a lot of people are not happy with this price scaling of how everyone just collectively decided that we're going to go from 4,000 to like whatever 5,000 rupee games or worse, depending on what PC studio do. So like there were people like, oh yeah, I mean, I don't want to like, how do I decide like to spend $5,000 on a game, and how do I do that like more than 3 or 4 times in a year?
The thing is, you don't spend $5,000. I think I've picked up more games this year than any other year ever, and all of them PS5. None of them, I've never paid MRP on any of them.
Yeah, but then what you're giving up is that you can't play them day one, right?
Yeah, but that's fine. Huh. At the end of the day, it's a question of whether that $5,000 is worth being a part of the water cooler discourse or not.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't think it is at the end of the day, because see, the used market is phenomenal. I think for Demon Souls and for Ratchet and Clank, I ended up paying a grand total of like $4,000 for both, grand total combined.
Whoa.
And this other one I picked up also was Jedi Fallen Order. I picked up for like, I think, $1,200.
Yeah, because it's like, what, 2.5 years old now?
No, the PS5 version released this year, right?
Oh, PS5 version. Uh-huh. That, yeah, upgraded version, but yeah.
Yeah, so the PS5 version on disc released this year, so I grabbed that. And then even Guardians, I mean, the only game I think I paid full price was Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm.
And that's because I wanted the collector's edition, because I knew that would sell out.
Right.
But otherwise, if you're just willing to wait, you're going to get some phenomenal deals. And okay, for example, right, Resident Evil Village at launch, four and a half really steep.
Hmm.
But if you waited it out, it's like 30 to 40% off right now, if I'm not mistaken. So I mean, there is no reason to buy day one unless you really, really have to be a part of the discourse. And I don't know, I don't think it's worth it at that point, because there's so much to play anyway Worst case, I'll just go back to playing Destiny.
That's what too. I like about Game Pass is like, or these subscription, even like with, you know, like EA Play, is that you're giving people the option, right? Like you will still have the option of, I mean, set aside, you know, maybe everyone goes down the Microsoft route and they just start deprioritizing physical sales. God forbid that doesn't happen. But like, if we have both sort of avenues available, you know, if you still have discs available and they get, you know, obviously they'll get less costly down the line and you can pick it up as you did this year. But then people who do want to be part of the conversation, do want to play day one, those kind of services give them the option of like, and then I think the other facet of it, which I was going to get to, was that it allows you to like sort of try out games, right? Like we sort of, demos used to be a thing and they pretty much like disappeared over the years.
Bring the demo back in 2022.
So like these kind of services in a way like allow that, right? You opt in for a month, you just like pay whatever the money is, try the game. If you don't like it, which is like, I think EA Play is really good with that. It's like you get 10 hours of the game, you like it, you buy the game, or you buy EA Play Pro if you're on PC, or you just like, you're like, oh yeah, I'm just going to walk away. So I think those kind of assets, like it's about sort of inviting more people into it, right? I think what I sort of keep coming back to is that, I think it was Phil Spencer or someone at Xbox who was like, we've realized over the years that you're only going to sell consoles to like some 300 million crowd in the world. You cannot go beyond that. And the gaming population, we've seen it for mobiles, is obviously billions. So what the reason they're so big on Game Pass and putting like Game Pass on a USB stick or whatever, Amazon Fire, stuff like that, is because they want to appeal to more people now. It's like this crowd is too tiny, like of people buying hardware and then playing games. So we need to push beyond that if we're going to like actually take our games to more people. Which is why, in a way, I support these services, that because you can actually achieve those goals.
Yeah, that's nice. But, and as someone who has worked on a subscription service in another life, it's very nice to have to say you want to hit a billion people and all. But at the end of the day, how are you going to make money? And that's the thing that worries me, because see, with Microsoft, keep in mind, this is Microsoft, the same company that gave us Windows Phone and took it away. So I'm a little more tentative on this, simply because at the end of it, how are they structuring it? I mean, obviously it's all running on Azure. So obviously, and I'm sure Azure is charging them a nice tidy sum. But at the end of it, eventually, when the buck stops, when you actually have to like, you know, look at the math, how's that going to fly? It's very admirable that you want to hit every gamer in the known universe. That's a fantastic thing to do. But again, the other question is how many of them will monetize? How many of them will get paid? Because right now the thought process with the developers are like, oh, this is great for us because we're going to get security upfront because Microsoft's paying us upfront. All right. Fine. You're taken care of. You know, Epic is doing that on PC. Microsoft's doing that with Game Pass. That's great. Fine. Sony might even do that to some degree. But at the end of the day, it's like fashion, right? What's trendy today may not be trendy tomorrow. And I don't know whether at least the big AAA guys, right? Someone like a Ubisoft, someone like a Take-Two, how much sense does it make for them? Like the rumored number that Microsoft paid for GTA 5 coming to Game Pass was, I think, around in the range of 35 to 40 million dollars. Now, while that works in the short term, it's not a feasible business model. And eventually, even though you have a $1 trillion valuation, how are you going to, eventually something's going to give. So my concern is, how is it being run? If you're using it as a way, like you said, right, to get people in, to give them the option, then okay, fine. But then there's also something of, you know, being too good to be true. And that's the part that worries me.
Yeah, like what's the long-term plan?
Yeah, because I've seen that firsthand. That happened with India Games and their Games on Demand service. I was running that and it got very messy, very fast. So it's going to be interesting to see. But I do agree that there needs to be a way to get people in. But there also needs to be a way to get people in and eventually have them pay. So that's going to be the challenge.
All right. I think that's as optimistic a note to end on. We can
on that bombshell.
I mean, it's not bombshell, it's basic math.
Yeah, I think Shark was just making a Top Gear reference.
Yeah, there is Top Gear.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much, Rishi and Shark, for joining us and talking to us about the games of 2021.
Thank you, Akil.
Thanks for having me.
That's all for this episode of Orbital. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Gadget360. You can write to us at podcast@gadget360.com. And we will see you with a new episode next week.